Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sunday marks 21 years since September 11th became seared into our country's history. Many of us remember exactly where we were that morning of 2001. The coordinated series of terrorist attacks claimed nearly 3,000 lives in the immediate aftermath, but the death toll has grown in the years and decades since for survivors and first responders continuing to suffer the health impacts of being exposed to ground zero. And the scars since include controversial wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as a rise in anti-Muslim sentiment still felt today. We're going to listen to how a local chaplain reflects on that day. Mindy Russell has been a trauma wellness chaplain for nearly 30 years, which includes responding to Ground Zero. And with that, Chaplain Russell joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicki. You know, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, Chaplain Russell, Mindy, you became a chaplain nearly 30 years ago, 1994, and you are there for some of the most darkest, most traumatic times across those decades. What drew you to this service?
So I just quote Mark Twain, where he said, there's two significant events in everybody's life, the day you were born and the day you know why. And I know I was born to help people in the worst times of their lives.
Where were you when you first learned of what we now know as 9/11?
Well, I was recovering from a horrific national news thing in Sacramento, where this young man killed seven of the city employees of Sacramento. And I was on September 10th going around with the CEO of that security team to meet every one of the family members to give and express his apologies. So at 11 o'clock at night on September 10th, I said to my husband, I'm taking off tomorrow. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, I got my first page, if anybody remembers pagers, to say, get out to New York. It's been an accident, a plane accident. And the rest is history.
And you just hopped on a plane and you headed to New York.
I did not. So we are allowed to have 4 hours to get ourselves ready, get our business, because we never know how long we're going to be gone. And NTSB, who I was working with, basically said, just get over to the airport. We'll tell you and direct you where you're going to go. Well, then the second plane hit and I called back to Washington, D.C. and said, what do you want me to do? And they basically said, find your way out here as soon as you can and hung up on me. So it was chaos from the very get-go. I always have my go bag packed, so that wasn't a problem. And I have my husband who stayed behind to be able to take care of everything out here because we were quite busy. And then Travis Air Force called me and said, you got a flight with USAR team. Get down here in 40 minutes. And it was a 5 o'clock rush hour time. And so everything was just, you got to keep pushing. Don't give up. Don't give up. I get down there. And we're the only plane in the sky that the United States president allowed to fly.
Wow, that is such a good point and a good reminder because, yeah, you couldn't fly at that time commercially. And I know journalists who they literally had to drive across the country to actually cover what was happening. When you landed, I mean, this started as, you know, a logistical chaotic mess, understandably. But when you responded, how did you navigate providing support?
What kind of support? For me to get to them, right?
Right.
Okay, thank you. So we rented a car when we got into the New Jersey. That's where the USAR team was planted. So we rented a car and got over there. And you know what? I've never been to New York before. Never had to ask directions where was Ground Zero because the plume of smoke was in the air. So we got to the first location where they said everybody was in prompts. In processing, which is a very common thing you do in disasters, but never at this level. There were lines and lines and lines. And so we were able to, because of what we were there for first responders, they put us through a line to expedite what we were doing, gave us things like, it was amazing, gave us things like a compass, a magic marker to put our social security number on our arm, an ID that changed like 20 times in the 16 days I was there. And they gave me a pack of cigarettes. And I said, oh, no, I don't smoke. And he said, it's not for you. It's for anybody that needs one because that's how they're getting through the day. It's like, okay, well, there, where's the Jack Daniels? But that's a joke. You have to have some time,
Some
some
levity,
humor.
yeah.
Yeah. And so he kind of smiled and pushed me through. We were not issued breathing apparatus. We were not issued hard pets. We were literally in our street clothes or our uniforms, and to the detriment of so many first responders'
Yeah,
health.
absolutely. And some still struggle with health care. A lot of them do. When you think of 9/11 each year since then, so for the past 20 years or so, do the same memories return or do you reflect on it differently?
That is such a great question. And this is what I do every year. I get to speak about 9/11, and every year the memories are still there, but I don't entertain evil and I don't like to talk about darkness. Those burning buildings are no longer there. We have a beautiful memorial in place of that to honor the lives, not the death, of the people that died. And I'm really emphatic on the fact that 9/11 happened. We should always tell every generation what happened, why it happened, where it happened, and what the people did, because then comes 9/12. And that's what I talk about, the hope, the unity, the love, the good Samaritans that came out of nowhere to help other people. It was such a unifying thing that if we could take that reflection of 9/12 back today, we would build on America that has been so divided in so many ways.
Have you been back since?
I have. They invited me back. Well, they invite me back every year. I went back on the 5th anniversary as a speaker, and I went back on the 15th anniversary. I usually don't go back anymore because every year I'm asked to go somewhere in the nation to speak on it. And I think why people still like to hear my story is because I do share hope. Yeah, everything that had to happen that day was horrible. But what came out of it is where we live today or could live today.
Do you keep in touch with the people that you met, those, I believe, 16 or more, or more than 2 weeks that you were there helping others?
So one of the things that we had to sign at the IC, the incident command post, was we could not take anything from the crime scene. And if anybody did, they were immediately sent away. We were not allowed to take pictures. And remember, back in those days, our phones didn't have cameras. We literally had to have a separate flash, click, that kind of thing. So we were, I was, I listened to those kind of rules, protocols, and procedures. I honored that because I was their guest. And so in any deployment that I'm in, I will go with what they ask of us. So I didn't take pictures, not of myself. There was no such thing as selfies. And I did not take anything from the crime scene to, but I still have a lot of memorabilia of things that people gave me and letters that were written specifically to me. So that was beautiful. But I think the whole thing about being there and what I took back with the people, there were people that wrote books that mentioned the effect of the ministry of chaplains and what we were able to do for them. There was 200 from Sacramento that either had relatives or they were there, and I kept in touch with them for about 10 years. But here's the good thing. People either get bitter or better after something like this happens. This was more than just grief and loss. This was traumatic. And it was very exposing. Everybody that was there or a victim of some sort became a drama celebrity. Some chose to stay there. And you can see how I sp still speak to one of the men in the banks that a picture was taken from a cam, an office camera. And you can see him hiding under his desk and the plane coming up beside the building he was at. It's chilling. And he is still there today. I'm not there. I'm not on line 11 anymore. I am in 2022 saying all the things that happen and how we can process so that we retrain our brain from trauma. I hope I answered that question. That
Yeah,
was a
no,
long answer.
you did.
Sorry.
It's an important one, though. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's now a young adult population who weren't alive, and others were too young to remember. Does that worry you? How do you want them to learn about this day?
So my book is not going to be out by 9/11, which we were really pushing for, but it really starts with very historical, what happened, when did it happen, that kind of thing. I stay out of the politics because this is not about politics, it's about people and America. And so I have this fear that just like Veterans Day and Memorial Day and Flag Day and things that are very important to the history of America is being watered down, or unfortunately, even challenged that the history wasn't the best. You know what? America is not perfect. And you know why? Because you and me and people run it, right? We're not perfect. But I've been all over the world, and I am going to tell you, America is the best country in the world with all its warts. And all of its misgivings, there's so much good in America. And so I really believe we need to continue to teach it in school as a history lesson. It breaks my heart that my own 14-year-old granddaughter thinks it's Patriot Day. No, it's not Patriot Day. It is 9/11 Day, and they call it that day because they didn't want to offend somebody. Oh my goodness. So anyway, I just think that our generations need to know about our past so that they can make our future better.
Yeah. Chaplain Russell, you are there with open arms to help people find closure or solace in the face of the incomprehensible. You know, we're talking about September 11th, but you're also there for mass shootings, which are large scale. But you're also there for moments of loss and trauma for a single family, a workplace, an individual. Is there a common thread that we can all pull from this to guide us during trauma if we're ever faced with it?
The families that call me to say, how can I help my family member? So, whether it's an individual or a mass shooting or a disaster like this, the biggest thing you can offer anyone is just to listen and be there in the moment with them. I think if everybody would do that, get comfortable with silence, get comfortable with just hearing their pain. It's not your pain. You're not going to fix it, and you're not going to take it away from them. But if you will let them just share their pain without judging or giving them your opinion or even minimizing it, but just allowing, they will be healed by hearing the words that are kept in darkness in their minds. See, we want people to talk out that garbage, that stinking thinking, we call it, because when you rehearse over and over again in your mind the tragedies and the atrocities that have happened to you, what ends up happening is it gets even more magnified and distorted. You, as the listener, can help them clean it up and shed light on the darkest part of their lives to let them see they made it and they could continue making it.
Mindy Russell has been a trauma wellness chaplain for nearly 30 years and responded to Ground Zero for 9/11. Thank you so much, Chaplain Russell.
You're welcome, Vicki. Thank you.
And Mindy will be taking part in an event this weekend, September 11th, which is a Sunday, at Quarry Park in Rockland. We have information on our website at capradio.org/insight. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests on our Insight page. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.